continue. We've convened this session dealing with the National Skills Fund, and then on our agenda, as members would know, that we will be dealing also with other domestic issues, including adoption of minors and one or two other issues. Also, just to indicate that we were not here last week. We went on a oversight visit starting in KZN, moved to Gauteng, ended up at University of Free State. And I think it gave a reflection on some of the real issues and the challenges, but obviously also the opportunities that as a committee we are faced with in this broader context. In one of those site visits, we had the pleasure of meeting the department at its head office. Members would recall that we, in one of our last meetings at the strat plan process, we actually indicated that we need to visit the office. And just to indicate to the Director General that we were able to see that you are moving old offices and the old moving into the new, and it was everything of the best for that movement of the head office itself. We were able to get a briefing from NSF. We also indicated to NSF that it's possibly proper that some of the strategic issues are being dealt with here today. But we were able to get a document then, which was presented, I think it was the 14th of April, just around some of the programs, the objectives, where it comes from, the mandating forums, etc., etc. We indicated to the department then that clearly we need to get into a strategic discussion. Reality is NSF has been underspent. Reality is that we are in a new financial year, and it's important therefore to see how we can in fact ensure as society, both civil society, government, public sector at large, as well as the department itself, in order for us to deliver on this mandate in the year of action. We've been given the documentation, I believe, before the time today, so at least members have the time to reflect on most of the presentation. So with that, is there any apologies, Secretary?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mangena and Ms. Nelson, as well as Mr. Khatebe, have apologies.
Yeah, I should just note that Mr. Khatebe has been discharged now. So we've had to release him to hospital. He has been hospitalized, I think, on Monday, Tuesday morning last week. So we were not able to see the trip through.
Chair, I had some questions about the summit, education summit to be held in Mitchell's Plain on Saturday. If I can just have an opportunity to ask this question.
The on the program you will see there's an agenda item later.
Okay.
Domestic stuff.
That's fine.
Anything else? If not, then we would be able to move immediately into the department. Over to you, Director General.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation to us to come and present. I'd like to begin by introducing the team of people from the department, some of whom will be contributing to the presentations and others of whom will be available to answer any questions. On my right behind me is DDG Feroz Patel, who is the only permanent DDG in the department up until the appointments are made, who's responsible in the department for policy monitoring coordination, HRDSA, and in the interim is acting as the executive officer of the NSA. To his left, we have Mr. Hubert Maspani, who is the acting chief directorate for the National Skills Fund. To the left of him, we've invited our chairperson of the National Skills Authority, Mr. Eddie Matudibodu, to be part of the presentation to the Portfolio Committee. Mr. Matudibodu was appointed by the minister, I believe, in early March. And so this is the first time that he will be in the Portfolio Committee meeting. This is a position that is on top of his normal work, and he's employed by NUM. And then to the left of Mr. Majidibadu is Thabo Masungwane, who runs the Secretariat for the National Skills Authority. Across the room, we have Mr. Tiens Trudeau, who, as the committee knows, is CFO for the Department of Higher Education and Training, and therefore has responsibility in terms of the DG's accountability for the NSF. And next to him, we have Mr. Bekie Mhlobo, who's acting DDG for Vocational and Continuing Education. And we also have Mr. Gwebs Konde from the Minister's Advisor, as well as Mr. Sakele Langani, who's the director in my office, and the minister's parliamentary officer, Nokapula Thaba. Chairperson, there's two documents that have been distributed. In fact, there's more documents that have been distributed, I think, but at least the first one is a copy of this presentation, which is printed in color with three slides a page. And then there's supplementary documentation and hard copy, one being the National Skills Funds report, which is a 32-page document, and it's the one dated to 21st of April. There was some editing done overnight in terms of this documentation, so you need to have the correct one in front of you. Chairperson, the letter of request that we received from the committee indicated that the committee requests the presence of the leadership in the meeting next week, which is today, and that it indicated that the committee wants to be briefed on two things. Firstly, the budget and strategic plans of the National Skills Fund, and secondly, the budget and strategic plans for the financial year for the National Skills Authority. The structure of the presentation is that we're going to first of all commence with the National Skills Fund, and then we're going to move to the National Skills Authority. In terms of the National Skills Fund, we'll make some preliminary comments very briefly, and then I'll give away to Mr. Hubert Mashabani, who will make a presentation of the first, the next 20 slides or so, and he's the Acting Chief Director of the National Skills Fund. Then we'll move to the National Skills Authority. Again, I will make some preliminary comments. Then we will give an opportunity to Mr. Eddie Majidibodu if he would like to make some comments in his capacity as chair. But the presentation will be made by the Acting Executive Officer of the National Skills Authority, who is DDG, Mr. Feroz Patel. And I wanted in particular to acknowledge the support of Mr. Thabo Masungwane, who runs the NSA Secretariat. So, if we move to the budget and strategic plans of the National Skills Fund, the comments that I would like to make is that, as you've indicated in your opening comments, there has been historically underspending within the National Skills Funds, and indeed a range of queries arising from work of the Auditor General. What Minister has decided is that we need to appoint an executive officer of the National Skills Fund, as is provided for in the legislation, and this appointment is going to take place very rapidly in an acting capacity. we hope to appoint somebody for more or less a year so that we can move very quickly. And the intention is to bring in a high-level team to review the functioning and systems and processes of the NSF so that we can start having an NSF which is much more modernized in terms of its systems and processes. And we can strengthen accounting systems, strengthen systems in relation to disbursements, strengthen systems in terms of monitoring, and there's some very innovative work that we anticipate will happen there. So we'll be able to report to the portfolio committee in terms of both the appointment of the acting executive officer as well as the team to support. The review that is going to happen during this period of strengthening is informed by a wish of the department and the minister that we make the National Skills Fund a high-level grant-making body with capacity to advise and monitor and less of a general... Okay. And that means that we will work in different ways with national departments and provincial departments, giving them advice and support, but expecting that they will be more compliant with the conditionalities that are attached to the grants so that they play a greater role themselves. We also, as you know, are working on the National Skills Development Strategy 3, and in that, the vision of the NSCF into the future is that it will be used as a catalytic fund to leverage progress. But when NSCF 3 is released, you will be able to engage with us on that. We are also in discussion with Treasury regarding the status of the NSF as a public entity or a public service component. We are in the process of informing Treasury that the NSF is now indeed allocated to us, that it meets the criteria for listing as a public entity, but that the wish of Minister supported by Cabinet, we understand, is that it maintain the status or has a status as a public service component of government, and that we intend to address any of the weaknesses that have been historically identified through the processes that we've indicated above, particularly the key bullet points 1 and 2. So, Chairperson, those are my introductory comments, and I now want to hand over to Mr. Hubert Mashabane to do the detailed presentation.
Thank you, DG, and good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee. My presentation would cover about 5 areas, the first one being just an overview of the legislative aspects that give direction to the NSF, and then to touch on a bit of a context around which the strategic plan of the fund is crafted, and then to touch on a bit on the key objectives, and then to then touch on the budget as we have projected it over the MTF period. In terms of the mandate, the fund is mandated and established and mandated by those following pieces of legislation: the Skills Development Act, which is the key act that establishes the fund, and then the other legislation being the Skills Development Act that provides the resources. And then we also, in terms of the Act, Skills Development Act, need to manage the fund according to the PFMA, and then also the Public Service Regulation Act, with being part of what affects our day-to-day business. Our purposes, as from the Skills Development Act, is to fund projects identified in the National Skills Development Strategy as national priorities or other such projects as the DG may determine, but also that within that we also need to make provision for the administration of the fund within prescribed limits that the DG may set. And then in terms of governance, the fund doesn't have its own board like most of your public entities. It is under the direct control of the Director General of Higher Education. And in terms of the Act, the DG must control the fund, keep proper records, prepare financial statements annually, and appoint an executive officer who will be in the public service. There are other legal obligations that we must manage the fund in terms of the PFMA, and that the body that advises the minister on general skills development matter must also advise the minister on the framework and strategic and criteria on the allocation of funding from the NSA. In other words, what that means, it effectively means the NSA advises on how we apportion the funds to serve the purposes of the skills development strategy. But if we have any surpluses during a financial year, that those can be invested. The Act makes provision for that, and that the DG needs to submit annual financial statements to the NSA for information. And that if there are any unexpended balances for a particular financial year, that those can be carried over. Unlike your normal departmental budget, those get surrendered and get lost. But in our case, we can carry them over to the next financial year. That sets a bit of the legislative aspect that govern the fund on a day-to-day basis. The context in which then the strategic plan of the fund has been crafted, there are basically two contexts. One is the DHET context around its key priorities. As a fund falling directly under the control of the DHET and the Director General, we take into account what the department is mandated to do in terms of the government framework. And one such priority is the medium-term strategic framework, priority number 4, that says we need to strengthen the skills and human resource base of the country. The DHET is charged fully in making sure that strategic priority is met. In that context, the DHET seeks to develop and support a quality post-school education and training sector and to promote access to higher and vocational education and skills development training opportunities which respond to the need of the economy. Now, this is one such context that informs how we would then craft objectives, etc. The other context is the actual skills development strategy that is currently in force, that has been extended by the Minister of Higher Education to March 2011. That has a set of 5 objectives, and among those objectives, the NSF needs to play a role and kind of assist in achieving all of those objectives. I would not list all of them, but to say that in our day-to-day activities, we are primarily active in objective 2, 3, and 4. That's where the bulk of our targets and funding is spent. In terms of that, I would like to believe that members of the Portfolio Committee received our strategic plan, the thick document that was presented at some point. In that document, we have listed 3 key strategic objectives of the fund. The first one being to fund projects identified in the national skills development strategy as national priorities for NSDS2 and the incoming NSDS3, and to fund other projects as the DG might determine. And then the third objective being to develop internal and external structures and systems that effectively and efficiently enable the fund to achieve the 2 objectives above. And if you note, we have tended to take that directly from what the Act mandates us to do in terms of the first 2 objectives. When these are expanded in terms of what they mean, funding national priorities, what we mean there is that we will continue the work around NSDS 205 to 2011. We will implement projects. Part of our budget for the 2010-11 financial year will cover make, achieving some of those objectives under the NSDS that would end in March of 2011. And that for NSDS 3, we'll then begin some other new work in terms of developing draft disbursement criteria and procedures. Again, we'll be informed about what that NSDS 3 indicates in terms of what are the priorities that the nation should focus on in terms of skills development. And those criteria and disbursement procedures would then be recommended to the National Skills Authority. They are the body that would then advise the minister on the strategic framework and the criteria to say, we think you should focus the fund on these issues. This is how you should apportion the funding in terms of the weight across funding baskets, et cetera. And that we hope that by when we reach March, we would have finalized all of those procedures, including the operating procedures and all of it. We should be ready to then, from April of 2011, to start then calling for projects and disbursing funding, et cetera. And that we would then, in that period, also commence implementing those priorities coming out of NSDS 3, and that we will then monitor and evaluate the impact of the disbursements we make. Under 2, again, it's the same issues around criteria and disbursement procedures, but also that we would then implement whatever projects that the DG may determine. Remember, strategic objective 2 is around the DG determining other priorities that may be in service of the purposes of the Skills Development Act, as may be dictated to by national priorities of the government. Under strategic objective 3, we intend to improve the capacity and systems of the NSF so that it functions in an effective and efficient manner. I think the DG has already hinted to some of the plans that we would appoint an acting CEO. In terms of the Skills Development Act, the DG has the mandate to appoint an executive officer for the fund, but also that we would also then put together a team that would then look at the systems and procedures and see what are the issues that result in bottlenecks and issues of underspending, etc. We would address all of those. And I think we would also develop grant funding strategies that will be appropriate to whatever projects that may be on the table that speak to our national needs. And as the DG indicated, the wish of the department is to turn this into a grant-making body that is highly effective, that can show high levels of expenditure and impact. In terms of the outlook of the budget over the MTF period, that's the next 3 years, and some of the outputs that we have put in terms of the government requirement, I see that the DG has made a note here that this is a draft that still needs to be presented to the NSA and for approval and all of that. But in terms of just the estimates, we estimate that for the year 2010-11 we'll collect revenue in excess of $2 billion. And that would come primarily from your skills development levies, which will contribute about $1.7 billion. And the other is mostly non-tax revenue in the form of interest and a small contribution by Treasury into our fund. That's around 54-60 million, et cetera. And that, and over the MTF period up to 2013, we expect that income to increase 2.06 billion, 2.2 up to 2.3 billion. That's the inflows that we expect into the fund. In terms of the estimates that we have made, we think that we should be able to spend roughly in excess of 3 billion over that period, and that expenditure coming down slightly to 2.7 billion and finally to 2.3 billion. And part of the reasoning in compiling a budget like this that shows a decline in expenditure rather than an increase is specifically to work off the surpluses that we currently have in the fund. And as you see, we're budgeting for a deficit, which Treasury normally doesn't allow for unless you can show that you have other levels of funding that would cover your deficit. But primarily, the expenditure will go in the form of what Treasury calls transfers and subsidies. That's where the bulk of the expenditure sits. And that's primarily our program work, which is covered in the report in terms of the different funding windows and the target number of learners that we're trying to reach on an annual basis. And then there's a small portion around compensation of employees, as well as goods and services. Those are the systems and your things like travel and et cetera that supports a lot of our project work. In terms of selected indicators that we have put in the estimates for national expenditure, those are just part of the things that would come out of our funding windows. We aim to reach those numbers. Again, as you notice that the trend, we're starting 2010-11 with a high number of 18,400. Those are learners who are doing your long-term type projects, like your artisan type skills, your learnership that tends to be a bit expensive. And you see the trend again goes down as we've indicated that our expenditure pattern might drop a bit until it comes in tune with what we receive on an annual basis, which is roughly about $2 billion. We have projected this output on the basis of NSDS2 that runs up to March of 2011. It may be that when we revise our E&E and our outputs, some of these outputs may change. For example, in terms of ABET, we might find that because we're working closer with the department on ABET programs, we might reduce our involvement in direct ABET programs and allow the department to take a lead. And perhaps we might just be contributing resources rather than report on ABET and the department report on ABET, et cetera. But there is also another area where there's projection of high numbers of learners that we intend to reach under the Social Development Funding Window, SDFW. We're projecting figures up to 100,000 people annually being reached in terms of short skills intervention that allow them to gain skills and be placed in work opportunities, etc. And then in conclusion, I need to just say that in the last visit and appearance we had at the portfolio committee, we did a bit of reflection, and we believe that this period is characterized by some of the challenges that would see us balancing continued performance. The last thing we want is to actually drop our performance. We're currently underperforming, but at a minimum, we would like to keep that level of performance, if not extend it, but also do that in the spirit of change and integration as the fund joins the other family of skills developing institutions, your colleges, your universities. It needs to avoid being swamped into all of those and losing focus, but also making sure that it continues to remain relevant in the public space, show impact, etc. That we would read carefully the priorities that government would challenge us with and try to respond to those. And again, the issue around building capacity and systems to improve our turnaround times to ensure that it doesn't take a year to finalize one project, for example, before it gets implemented. And above all, to improve our communication with stakeholders to make sure that the fund is known in the public space. Our parliamentarians don't have to call us to parliament to explain what the fund is, but that there is adequate communication and reporting that kind of indicates who and what we do as a body.
They'll call you anyway. We'll call you here anyway.
I do. Thank you.
Thank you,
Richard. Listen, we're now going to look at the budget and strategic plans for this financial year of the National Skills Authority. I'm going to make introductory comments, and then I'm going to see if Eddie Madhubibodu would like to say something, and then we'll hand over to Faraj Patel.
Gigi, just a question. Do you think that you think it's best that we just deal with
otherwise it's too complex. Chairperson, can I suggest then that what we should do is to deal with the NSF. There's a handout, there's a presentation as well as a document. And then if we could, in terms of the time that the committee has for their engagement with us, just make sure that we reserve enough time for the NSA also to present.
Okay, yeah. Why don't we do this? Why don't we go through the NSA? Because it links with the strategic issues. It's
okay.
Where the mandate in the sense of the strategy comes from.
Okay.
So let's deal with that. I just thought let me just indicate to the members that I'm going to do it in that way. So we are starting to get into two presentations but under the banner of one broad presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Chairperson, as the members are aware, with the Skills Development Act being allocated to the Department of Higher Education and Training, it's been a period of this new department consolidating the work that's been done in the NSA over a period of time. The committee is aware that when Minister took responsibility for the Skills Development Act on the 1st of November, we agreed that the DG would act as the chair of the NSA for a period. That was done in order to just consolidate the NSA across the new responsibilities of the department. And in that period, we made considerable progress. There was a strategic review session over 2 days in December, where a range of issues were thrashed through and a range of commitments were made that will be reported on by the acting executive officer. So that will be reported in more detail. The second thing that has been very strategic in terms of creating a new department is the potential linkages between the National Skills Authority and the Human Resource Development South Africa Council. For many of us, I think that what's been very critical in this period of a couple of months is to have clarified the specific role of the NSA as an advisory structure and a clarity that the executive functions are located in the department. The immediate key tasks that are before the NSA is for the NSA to take forward the consultation that is necessary so that it's in a position to advise the minister, excuse the spelling, on both this new CETA landscape and on NSDS3. Presentations were made to the NSA on Friday the 16th on both of the final drafts of those documents, and the minister will be releasing them publicly within weeks. If I can now hand over to Mr. Eddie Madhubibodu.
Also to the chairperson, welcome and congratulations with your appointment, and we wish you well in your efforts to ensure a better skilling nation.
Thank you, chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. As Mary said earlier, I was appointed in February the 18th. I'm quite aware of challenges facing South Africa in terms of skill development. I've been in the environment for quite some time. And in my observations before I was appointed, I was quite happy that the NSA has now been put in the Department of Higher Education and Training. For me, that's a very strategic repositioning. And my role really is to ensure, of course, working with colleagues in the board, that we've got effective NSA that can play its roles in terms of the act and strategically advise the minister on skill development issues, especially the NSA, NSDS, as well as the policy frameworks, you know, in the skills development in South Africa. And I'm quite happy that some development has taken place within the NSA, and one of the things that makes me happy is that in the reviewing of the structures of the NSA, we have identified the need to have a very strong research capacity in the NSA, because that's going to help us as an authority, but also the country, to move forward with well-informed, you know, interventions. For example, the NSA, the NSDS 3 should be informed by thorough research and so on, and thorough consultation with stakeholders. And I'm quite happy that we're taking that direction. You know, I think in my observation in the past, I think there has not been systems that have been talking to each other. And I think there's an alignment with between the NSA and the Department of Education and Training is going to help us, you know, have effective systems that can talk to each other more clearly. Now, and with the strategies that has been presented by the NSF, I'm quite happy that more interventions to more strategic areas is going to be realized. And I think overall, Chairperson, I think we are moving to the right direction. You know, I would hate a situation whereby the NSA and the department don't have capacity to identify weaknesses in all the systems that could help us to improve the quality of skills development and training in our country. As a person who's got basic background on the engineering, I know that the engineers in different capacities, being mechanical engineers or electrical engineers, they would immediately identify where a problem is in any environment. And I think the capacity of both the NSA and the department in making sure that all the systems are understood by the role players is quite very important, because sometimes people say many things at the same time, and you find that whatever is being said is not helping us to move forward in terms of identifying the weaknesses in our systems and moving forward, improving those weaknesses. And therefore, I think the work that we're beginning to do in the NSA really is quite very important. And I think in the next few years, it's my hope that we'll see more changes, more radical movements and transformation in the area of skills development and so on and so on. We have taken some trips since I've been appointed, at least one so far, trying to look, I'm outside the country, trying to look at what other people are doing. And I've got a feeling that we've got so many things that we don't understand how they talk to each other, but we do have them. It's a matter of how do we, you know, make sure that they are effective and they can link to each other much more effectively, so that we can realize the objectives of skill development. I think, Mr. Chair, I want to pause there, and thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee, and also in a different role that I have to greet my leader, the chairperson of the NSA. And it's quite an interesting role because at least this is one area I don't have to listen to the DG, I have to listen to the chairperson of the NSA. So it is that in that particular role that I am making this particular presentation, the department on one side and the NSA on the other. In my presentation, I'll cover the functions of the NSA, which have, in a sense, been covered, but the composition, administration and support, the December 2009 strategic planning, the NSA work plan for 2010-11, which has been distributed, It's still a draft form because it's working in process through the structures of the NSA and the NSA budget, and the budget that, in terms of the voted particular funds that has been voted by Parliament, and not the parts that's coming from the National Skills Funds, which I will talk about. Now, I think both the DG and the chairperson of the NSA have indicated that, by and large, the biggest role of the NSA is to advise the minister. And I want to be very clear here in terms of my understanding of my role itself, is that the NSA, without fear or favor, needs to advise the minister, even if it means on any proposals put to it by the Department of Higher Education and Training. So the issue is that that was part of what we found in the December 2009 strategic planning of the conflation of department officials within the NSA, and the inability of the NSA to undertake its legislative role or mandate that was given to advise the minister. So that's why I say sometimes I have a different role in which I speak to the DG and say, DG, for the NSA, this is what the NSA wants in terms of the legislation, and you will have to make sure that you make it happen.
You second it from the department.
That's right. I just
so the DG can at any time pull the second.
Well, no. I don't think the DG is somewhere, but anyway. But then the NSA will have to, the DG will have to show course to the NSA. And my chairperson as to why.
Okay. So it's negotiation.
That's right. So it's the national, and I think it's important that I'm putting this in this way because it really shows the significant issue that was particularly raised around some of the blockages around movement. And that's why in the appointment of the new executive officer, of which I have declared no interest, but in terms of the new executive officer, we hope that that particular role in separation is maintained. That's also the reason why officials from the branch that deals with skills development have not been appointed as the executive officer, because the departmental branch itself cannot begin to influence a higher authority, in fact, the advisory body to the minister itself. So it's on the National Skills Development Policy, the National Skills Development Strategy. Now, the strategy is very important because it sets the blueprint for 5 years in terms of how CETAs themselves are going to particularly work, how they're going to align their plan, how the NSF is going to contribute towards the funding, as well as taking into account alignment with the Human Resource Development Strategy. Then guidelines on the implementation of the National Skills Strategy, and basically is, again, the department will have to do the work. They will have to bring it over to the National Skills Authority, and the National Skills Authority will have to comment on the implementation issues. Is it burdensome? Is it achievable? And that's why my executive my chairperson has indicated the issue that we require a facility to be able to independently assess those various documents that the department confuses us with. So we will have to, really thick documents, we'll have to have the capacity so that independently the NSA could provide the necessary advice to the minister on whether those guidelines. Now, these implementation guidelines are basically the issues on how the NSF agreed priorities are going to be dealt with, as well as the CETA workplace skills plans, particular issues. And then the strategic framework and criteria for allocation of subsidies from the National Skills Fund. Remember that the NSA doesn't set the framework, nor does it set the criteria. But the Director General, in terms of the legislature, will have to present that to the NSA. And the NSA can advise the minister whether they agree with the Director General or not, in terms of their own experiences in the particular field, and that's the process of the advice. And then, if there are any regulations to be made, it has to go through the National Skills Authority in terms of the processes that regulations normally follow. Secondly, is the liaison function. And it's a liaison function with CETAs, which I must say that that's another area that we want to strengthen, because there is a type of a distance between the NFA and the CETAs. You know, the CETAs sometimes look at the line, the reporting line, as the department all the time. But the NFA also has a role to be able to play, a very strong role. So it's also to do the advocacy, the consultations, etc., with the national skills in regards to the national skills development policy. So a lot of time and effort will have to go into the National Skills Authority itself, because of its type of an independent nature, that it itself will have to consult what they have to advise the minister on, what, if I can say, their constituency in terms of the CETAs, to find out what CETAs think about it, etc. So that when they advise the minister, they can say, Minister, we think this, but also the CETAs are of the view in terms of this particular policy that this is great or this is not great. And so too in terms of the National Skills Development Strategy and the Sector Skills Plans. Now, the Sector Skills Plans are Sector Skills Plans. Now, it's unfortunate that the term sector is used both in terms of a broad generic terms of sector, but also in terms of an institution that is the CETA, the Sector Education Training Authority. And often when we talk of Sector Skills Plans and the consultation process, it's not only those particular officials or persons on the boards of CETAs that constitute the sector. They are representatives of the sector. And therefore the voices of their representatives or the constituencies needs to be particularly heard. And so the NSA has, in terms of its strategic thrust, has determined that it will indicate to CETAs that when they do the sector skills plan, when they do these plans in alignment with the National Skills Development Strategy, that not only do they do alignment and follow those principles, but also suggest particular areas in which they can be of service, that the NSA itself will monitor to ensure that, for example, the big participants, big labor unions, industry, etc., are consulted. Because, you know, the movers and shakers often do not fit into the day-to-day structural issues of the CETA. And so, therefore, we think people should not be representing their jackets and their seats, but that they should also, in terms of popular participation, ensure that when they bring a particular position to the table, it is particularly well informed. Now, the functions is to report to the minister on progress made in implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy. And so, therefore, again, you know, the question is, does the chairperson and the members of the NSA wait for the department to come and give them a report to say, this is the progress we made with the National Skills Development Strategy, and then report to the minister, this is the progress made in terms of national skills. So what's the list? So the issue is that, I mean, if that was the case, we wouldn't need the National Skills Authority. The officials can report to the minister directly through the DG. But that means there's an important role for the NSA itself, again, I indicated from an objective side view, to have its own capacity to be able to assess whether there's progress, measure that, and to be able to then, yes, it can use departmental officials, and perhaps through the executive officer, I hope, to work with the department to ensure that departmental resources are also utilized to be able to assist the NSA in undertaking its particular task. To conduct investigations on any matter arising out of the application of the Act. Now, that's quite important, a quite important mandate that has been provided. I'm not aware, but of any major investigation that the NSA itself has undertaken. But it will require capacity to do that. If somebody is behaving in one way or the other, And the powers that you have given, that is, the Parliament has given the NSA in terms of this particular matter, is that if you look at it under subsection 2, for purposes of investigation referred to, the authority has prescribed powers of entry and to question and inspect. Very little people in our society have those powers. I think it's only the police, SARS, and customs, and the statistician general. So that means that it's so crucial. I mean, I think Parliament has gotten so considered it so crucial that we should not be dealing with skill development lightly. That we are spending millions of rands for skill development. We need to ensure that that money is happening and that people are not serving a party and claiming that it's training. And I'm saying this is including the issue of the 50% of the skills levy that goes back to the contributors. So the issue is we want to know whether it's meaningful training, the training fulfills the objectives that it was supposed to, because one does hear on the reports of that just because I want my 50% back from the CETA, I'm going to say I'm going to do training A, B, and C, and we'll go for a workshop on a cruise liner from Durban to Mauritius, and we have fulfilled that particular issue. So 90% of the expenditure is on something else. Importantly, it is also the function of the National Skills Authority to liaise with the QCTO, that's the Quality Council for Trades and Occupation, on occupational standards and qualifications. And this is going to be very, very important because, again, just referring to the issue, there's a lot of training that takes place. In fact, more than 1%. I think that organizations, enterprises, firms, industry are spending more than 1%. But if we only chase, and we believe that the mandate of the NSA is not only about 1%, it's about skill development and training. So it's a 1% plus what's the other stuff that is particularly being done. And if that skills development and training is taking place without a structured process, again, it's going to be meaningless, because we're saying that all skills development and training must be meaningful, must be recognized, must be accredited so that it assists in the process of enhancing skills. And then to exercise any other powers and perform any other duties conferred or imposed on the authority by this Act. And clearly, so that means that we've still got a lot of work just to read the Act and to find out what are the those particular powers, etc., conferred or imposed on the authority by this Act. There are other areas in other sections that we will have to pick up. So the summary, again, it's an advisory, advising the minister, liaising with CETA, reporting to the minister. And as Hubert also indicated earlier, is also the review of the accounts and the balance sheet of the National Skills Fund annually. Other than the parliamentary processes in terms of the PFMA, it will also be a compliance issue to be able to present those financials to the National Skills Authority. Now, the composition. It was amended in 2008, so there were older versions, and therefore the presentation is updated. So, Chair, I would just say that the one that has been the color presentation, three slides, two pages, presented today is the official document in terms of alignment with the Act. The one that was just given to you previously was the one taken without the amendments to the Act. So the NSA has 25 voting members and 7 non-voting members. Now, starting off with that word voting means that they have a mechanism to ensure that to break deadlocks very quickly and to move on with the work rather than to debate, and not come to any particular resolution or consensus. Now, the 15 members are nominated through NEDLAC and appointed by the minister, 5 each from the constituencies of labor, business, community. Yes, the chairperson appointed by the minister. Where I don't indicate voting, then means that there are voting members. The 7 non-voting members are right at the bottom, but we'll come to that. So that's the Nedlac constituency, 5 from labor, 5 from business, 5 from community. In addition, there will be deputy chairpersons, and deputy chairpersons must also represent those 3 communities in addition to the state and one other. Then there's 5 state representatives appointed by the minister. Department of, it's not prescribed, but in a moment it's relevant departments that are quite relevant to the work. Department of Labor, DTI, Higher Education and Training. And you'll notice Higher Education and Training is one member there. They don't run the show. DPSA,
yeah.
And Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. And then there's 4 education and skills development providers that need to be included. Now, clearly, yeah, the NSA will have to look at the spread and whether they cover. But by and large, it should cover the public education and training sector. Very important that when we say the public, it is in terms of providers and not necessarily the department in its role as as managing the Skills Development Act. So as providers, on the provider. So private, the FET and ABET providers, and universities. We'll just have to unpack the issue of public a bit, but that's the work that we will have to do in the NSA. And then there's 6 ministerial non-voting appointments. 2 with expertise in skills development, 2 with expertise in employment, 1 SECWA, and 1 QCTO. So those are the 6 non-voting experts, interest groups, and then the executive officer who will also be non-voting. Administration and support, I think we've indicated that the NSA is led by the chairperson, appointed by the minister, supported by an executive officer. The NSA also works with subcommittees in order to improve its efficiency and effectiveness. We have a secretariat, and Thabo, who's here with us, is the one that ensures that the decisions of the NSA are carried out, and it's my job to ensure that is done and that the NSA is prepared to be able to undertake its task. It also renders administration and logistics services to the NSA and provides liaison functions between the Department of Higher Education, the National Skills Authorities, and other stakeholders. Now, I think December 2009 was just after the political functions were assigned to the minister. They were done in November. And that's the time that there was a strategic planning meeting. And the strategic plan of the NSA, as well as some of the actions it has taken, have moved towards strengthening the NSA to perform its advisory function. In other words, to be able to stand on its own to perform the particular functions without depending on somebody else to be able to perform that function. Also providing a realistic budget to a work plan proposed by the NSA that the NSA itself must determine in terms of its functions, what is it that will be required for it to perform its function, and then for us to take that to the Director General to say to consider this in terms of the NSA being able to, and to ensure that the NSA is able to perform its function. Also processes to align the human resource development of South Africa, and the council has just been launched by the Deputy President because it is chaired by the Deputy President on the 30th of March. But alignment both in terms of content and also reporting and communication. And therefore, because of these processes, the planning for the council took quite a while, a submission has been made to the Deputy President for inclusion of the chair into the council, as well as one other particular member. The job description for my relief person, whoever comes in, has been finalized. We've the department has consulted that with the NSA, and my understanding is that it's now with the department to take through the particular process of advertisement. Process on the workshop, I think the issue is that since we've got a chairperson, we feel we really have a leader, and we are able to then move forward as the NSA. We also, the alignment of the National Skills Development Strategy 3 to the Human Resource Development is underway. And I've alluded to the issue of the council. The chairperson and the EO, let me just change the tense there. The chairperson has been appointed. The EO is in the process of being appointed. Now, fundamentally, the December 2009 meeting fundamentally re-looked at the role of the NSA in terms of its advisory function. And clearly, in that particular strategic planning meeting, members did indicate their frustrations in the ability for them to undertake their particular functions. However, it's not very easy just putting down the plan in 1 month and saying we want A, B, C, D, E. So we ourselves have given ourselves work in terms of the NSA undertaking an organizational development exercise to distill the issues that have been recommended in the strategic plan, but also to do costing, etc., around that area, and in terms of the ability of the NSA to fulfill that particular work plan. And so the work plan has been issued separately in terms of it, and the subcommittees of the NSA will have to look at it in detail. We also expect that the subcommittees will contribute towards what is required and ensure that the whatever is required is able to be delivered on. So, for example, research, we can't just say research. If they just give us research, we don't know how much we're going to do. There needs to be specific research questions, and these questions need to be framed, and we have to assess the methodology to be used. And I must indicate here that the research, well, the terms of reference will be guided by the NSA. Not necessarily the agenda of the department, but of the NSA. The department will have to execute and be able to undertake that and administer that for the NSA. The research will belong to the NSA. I spoke about that. The document called the draft, and chair, I'm not going to go into detail because it's been given out, and perhaps we'll answer questions. The chairperson, myself, and Thabo would probably respond to any questions that are there. It was tabled at the NSA meeting on the 16th of April, and it was noted and referred to subcommittees. So what the NSA has to do is to still approve this particular document. Costing will have to be done. Then we will do a submission to the Director General to ensure that funding through the National Skills Fund is made available. The actual funds for us to be here today, etc., etc., that already we do have some funds, and that's through the voted funds of 5.278 million. That includes the salaries of the secretariat, goods and services, and a bit of capital, not in terms of the substantive work of the NSA. So the research, the consultations, the investigations, and that will come out of this particular work plan. Chair, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Let me then indicate that what we've now got is both the strategic thrust as well as the operational one, dealing with both NSF as well as the NSA. I think upfront we want to say that if we're going to deal with issues of yesteryear and the history about it,
then clearly we know we're going to get into a difficulty. Because the reality is our view as a committee, and that view was expressed last week, the Director General, is that the way the fund was managed and operationalized in the last couple of years leaves much to be desired. I think that is what we want to say. That it was much more a reactive approach, even though there was an NSDS, and it was not a proactive approach. Meaning it was, if you actually look at the national plan, and then that plan enforced into the provinces and into municipalities, there was not an alignment between national, province, local, in terms of the way we rolled out its implementation and its strategic thrust. That we've indicated that in terms of the year currently and the last year, the decision taken to realign this department and unbundle the old and establish a new, we are therefore in that transition from the old into the new, and that's really the positioning element into it. It's how far one can actually move forward, but also dealing with the issues really just on a day-to-day basis. You can't park the day-to-day basis and say we're now going to first draw up a plan and a strategy over the next 20 years. However, differently, you can't also just deal with it today's stuff. We've seen a serious under-expenditure at the level of the NSF, and it's obviously precisely because of some of those alignment issues in nationally, provincially, and locally. So though we've seen GIPSA emerge and some alignment processes being enforced, though we saw the growth and development strategy and therefore a skilling agenda into the GDS process, we are saying we've possibly moved forward, but not, and this is, I'm speaking with the last couple of years now, not where we were supposed to be. The fact that we've now got a realigned agenda creates an opportunity for all of us then to say, how do we in fact influence that chairperson of NSA? And how do we in fact correct some of the wrongs of the past? Understanding that it's a lot of our issues would relate to fragmentation and processing, etc. Clearly what we've also received from the presentations is one of some form of visionary statement of where the department hoped to take it into the future. There would be a discussion for that at some stage even within. For example, how much, for example, will the NSF be a disbursement at the level of, you know, handing over to different departments, having over to different entities, and a control. What is that? What's going to be the balancing act into the future of that? The easy way out most probably would to say, fine, let's hand it over to Public Works and put R1 billion in Public Works portfolio, but is Public Works actually executing its mandate even before R1 billion? I'm saying those are the type of real issues that we're going to have to think through even before final decisions like that to be taken. And that's where, because it will alter somehow the NSF mechanisms and implementations, and I think the committee would have obviously some form of interest in a debate and discussions like that. From that meeting of last week where we've concluded, we've seen the slide emerging that speaks about the balancing act and the capacity. One of the things that I've raised is, as we are rolling out, how do we just make sure that we are flying low in ensuring that we are maintaining the operationalization of the process and the implementation? And just the appointment of the CEO and the review itself, in itself, will not necessarily address some of those real issues. And hence, because that's an action, but it's the processes beyond that that really matters. With that, members, are sort of just contextualizing some of our discussion last week and say, if we are able to say this is where it's now, table has been laid. We've analyzed the past. We had a bit of that last week. We know we've got a judgment view on that. And now the department has come and said, here's the NSA. this is a reflection into the future, and this is the NSF, and this is where we are heading into the future. You will also see there is this other documentation. So one is the report to the NSF. If people want to get into this discussion, I'm going to allow that as a as an item out of it. It was tabled, not necessarily constable. So, members, over to you. I'm noting. I'm going to follow from the right. Member Banana. Namo.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I noted that each presenter here has mentioned advising the minister more than three times. But I have also noted that the NSF and NSA actually need more advice than the minister himself. Chairperson, our municipalities, many of them are dysfunctional, and part of the problem is lack of skilled workers in many technical sectors of employment, such as the supply of water, electricity, and roads, and so on. This happening despite the fact that there's money available to skill the people in this country who could then be serving those municipalities and improve the quality of life of our people in those municipalities. The NSF has spent very little of its budget, and the only benefiting provinces being KZN, and I think Eastern Cape. Yes. Now, the question is, why did other provinces...
That's specifically on ABET, possibly. Was that, oh, why are you speaking general now?
No. I'm speaking on this matter of on NSF.
Yeah, but there's different projects in NSF. Yeah. So are we speaking ABET, or are we speaking general?
Oh, yes. I'm speaking general.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
Trying to cover everything.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And one would ask, why are other provinces not benefiting equally? Is it because the information is not filtered to those provinces to say, here is money, you can apply for it in order to skill the people? And secondly, DG, would you say this underspending is as a result of lack of the board, the controlling board, that could be perhaps helping to direct and redirect money rather than money sitting in the coffers not being spent? Thank you.
Can we... We really couldn't wait. We had to start, Member Magazine. Welcome. It's always good seeing you around me. Member James.
I just want to do a very unusual thing and ask my colleague please to look at the documents again.
I thought to help your colleague and my colleague.
Because what he said wasn't accurate. But my question, I mean, the number of the issue is that the ultimate test of what you do as the NSA is the number of South Africans, young South Africans, who walk out of the system for the qualification in hand that's marketable. That's the test. The test is not how many people you employ. The test is not any of those other things, or clearly you need a staff to execute. But the test is how many kids are walking out of the system with qualifications that are marketable. It is obviously utterly unacceptable that all the money that you have is not being spent. And we can explain, we'll look at why that's so. But clearly, your commitment is to do things differently so that the money, in fact, is spent. But I'm not convinced that you're doing it differently. I want you to convince me of that. Because you are a bureaucracy, bureaucracies have limitations, and one of the limitations is that you have a hard time actually spending the money you ought to spend because you are not reaching the projects you ought to be reaching. So I would like to have an answer to two questions, very specific questions. The one question is, how much money is unspent exactly? And secondly, how are you going to do things differently so that you have actually have a working institution?
Morning, Chet. Morning. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Chair. The exposure I had in the last week towards the skills landscape, I vacillate from despair to compassion, actually. In my moment of despair, I think that somebody needs to manage this fund. But again, I know that it's reproductive because this will be yet another tender issue. So I leave that and I become compassionate. So when I'm compassionate, I hope things can be done differently. So let me do that one. I am encouraged by the chairperson's words of debut words to the portfolio committee, and I hope that will work well together. Just starting with the, let me just flow with it. Well, with the acting chief director for NSF, I think you've heard us. I'm sure we're beginning to sound like broken records. I'm beginning to be ashamed of myself also talking about the same thing. But also, the more we talk about them, the more you don't change even your language. Such that coming to Parliament is not really engaging now, but compliance. Because nothing seems to change much. But anyway, I think that the report itself is more, and it's, I really embrace it. But talking about the rollover funding, which is really the issue with me, that if the mandate is to roll over the funds, and if that mandate cannot be changed for whatever reason, I don't know why, because it incentivizes poor performance. So for me, it looks like then we have to find ways to make sure that that which needs to happen, happens. And therefore, we really do need to have internal controls to monitor performance. We cannot, and I'm saying this again and again and again, we cannot keep on rolling funds to no avail. We can't just do that. We've got to justify why we do that one. In terms of, with reference to your conclusion, Mr. Chief Director, balancing continued performance, you said something about performance. I don't know what you said, but this is mediocre language. It can't be balancing continued performance because performance has been dismal. You have to step up performance completely and outrightly. There's no other way. There's nothing to balance. You have to step up. If it's only 24% that was used, you can't balance that. We have to step up that. And so we must set targets for performance. And I mean, I know that because my frustration is that we're trapped in bureaucracy here. It's really bureaucracy. And I'm sorry, Mr. Acting DDG. The strategic plan itself is more about structural analysis than a strategic plan. And I do know that authority does that which authority must do. I know that for a fact. But hey, take us where it must naturally get. We can understand how this authority works. We can understand all the structural, the anatomy of the NSA and everything. But we also have to account to the public in terms of what is happening. So that's really the kind of frustration. And of course, the whole undertaking of change is really embraced by us, and we will support that. In terms of the positions being created, guys, positions can't just be in a process of being created. I mean, that process, what is that process of creation? Because there's also going to be a process of advertising. So let's get done with the things, Mr. Chairperson, that need to be done. I think that there must be somewhere a position of EO that must talk to these things instead of it having to be created for the amount of time. Time is running out, and we will now be whinging as Parliament in terms of another rollover funding that will be sitting on something that has not yet been done. But I want to wish everybody well, and I hope that we will really change. Again, I mean, I'm not wanting to change treasury language and things like those, but this thing of surplus, you know that it's not right, because it's not. It's unexpenditure. But that, thank you very much, Mr. Marshall. I hope we're friends now after this. I will never say anything. I will really wish you well, and I wish the chairperson very, very well. Lastly, for the chairperson, you need to re-image, to rebrand the national skills landscape. It does not have a good reputation. It might be that it's doing a good thing, but we cannot keep on doing this all the time to no avail. We have to re-image and rebrand. Of course, it also has to behave differently, which is reputation management. Thanks.
Member Mushwana. This issue of starting from the left, was it the left today?
The right.
Very far right.
Geographical speak.
Perhaps, and thank you, but perhaps next time you'll remember that you started from the, if it's the left, perhaps you start from the right.
Because my right, your left.
Yes, I'm covered.
Partly.
Because I needed to check this unextended balance, if it can be carried over. My question was versus understanding, because we need to deal with understanding. That is said. But then I'm looking at your, with due respect, with your order of the key strategic objectives. There is 1, 2, and 3. I'm looking at the third one, and I would believe perhaps it would make a lot of sense to me if it was the first one. You see, if you develop the system, my understanding that is that this system will even assist in funding the project. But I see you start by funding the project, and then after you have funded, you fund even the other strategic projects, but then you come with a system that effectively enables the achievement of those. I'm not sure. I don't understand how you are going to fund them without the correct system. Because usually we are questioning, unless if I don't understand, that I said with due accordance. I would definitely have loved to the strategic plan, the key objective number one, to be coming up with the system that will ensure that this is happening. Thank you.
Member Kuba.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would rather avoid repeating some of the things that have been said. But in a nutshell, Chair, what it says to us is that we need to review legislation as Parliament that governs NSF and NSA. That's pure. And I think as the Portfolio Committee, we need to start that initiative and had set our sights a target to say before the Parliament rises this year, we should have started that process. And I think we need to put it in record through the Secretariat that let's initiate the process now. Otherwise, you're going to complain about everything else. The issue is on the legislation. That's why we have this problem with NSF. So we've got to go back as Parliament, as members of this committee, to rectify that problem. That's in a nutshell. Agreeing with everything that has been said by my colleagues earlier on. Then the next issue that I want to speak on, Chair, it's around, I'm looking at the document portfolio, the one that speaks on National Food Funding Report to the Portfolio Committee. Going through it, Chair, it raises a number of questions. You start with the issue of, even in terms of how it's reported, you are not given exactly what was the target, and therefore in terms of achievement, what was the budgeted in some areas. So I'm just making this generic because otherwise I'll have to go page by page, and I've made my notes. I see it's that many. I might end up taking more or doing a presentation myself. Again, on the issue of provinces, for example, let's just start with page 11 where it says summary of program outputs. You have a lot of targets. That's my assumption that you trained and you based. I'm not so sure what's happening there. But overall, it says to us that in 2010, 57, for example, in social development, in adult abate, 57,000. People trained, and cumulative. I'm not so sure what does that mean, meaning that we are expecting or is it continue on that one? But again, in terms of what are we basing these figures on? To be able to say this is where we are, where is the actual target at? I see the 08-09, what has been produced, but where is it what we had already targeted and how far are we performing in terms of the training? My colleague spoke about the issue of non or under expenditure, which reflects in the document across the board, all provinces. I mean, you will find a lot of provinces being allocated 97,000, and therefore the others would spend 40-something, yeah, 100,000. And there's a note there, which I think DG would have to clarify. I see there's the DG of Labor has given provinces a leeway to spend until from this year. When was that done in terms of the mandate? Did he give this mandate while this was still under his authority or when specifically? Because we understand that it moved from November. I just wanted to get clarity on that one. Secondly, I'm a bit worried about some inconsistent reporting. For example, the overall document, as you said, last week we dealt with what we were, from KZN, we've been interacting with NSF. And I raised this even in that meeting, that there's inconsistency of reporting. The other time you're given this figure at this level, the other time the figure does not correspond. I mean, across the documents that we've been given since last week, including even this one. Specifically, I'm just making an example of KZN, for example, where I have about three documents that don't speak on each other. Just that's my concern on that. But again, going through to say, who, in terms of the provinces, when they determine their training, their projects, noting that they're underspending, they're not spending, but in terms of that child, who monitors to say they have been able to say this is what they would do, and it's supposed to be part of their provincial growth strategy. Do we ever, as NSF, before even dispending the funds from central, whoever that needs to do that, do we ever verify that that is part of this, of the strategy of the province? Or do we end up with projects which are funded from our side, which are not part of the growth strategy within a province? And if there's been such an incident, what has happened? For example, if you look at Gauteng, where I come from, the projects that fall within Gauteng, are they coming from the growth strategy? Have we checked that they come from the growth strategy as we are dispensing the funds? So the issue is that there is a need for monitoring. As I said, it's going to need me to speak for a long time, I mean, if I'm to go, but what I'm simply saying is that there is a need for us to really review the legislation. There are a number of things that are not going right, and therefore, you know, you'd have to go bit by bit to really have to raise all these issues. I'm just trying to highlight some of those issues. And just to say, I mean, even in terms of the skill, as we are sitting now, Chair, a number of students are going to be deregistered this April in all institutions nationally because of funding. And I just don't understand why do we understand on skills training. As we are sitting, I mean, last week we had to intervene with Free State thanks to Dr. Prof. Sabara, who managed to get those students the leeway of the institution not deregistering them last week. Though there's still discussion because there's money needed by institutions because they've got to survive. But we're sitting with institutions here, like NSF, that has a scarce skill training fund that is sitting. We have students who are being deregistered in institutions. Can somehow we find a way of synchronizing this thing?
The last question.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a few things. The one is the 2.4 billion that has been put aside for training layoff schemes, which there's some detailed reporting here as to what frustrated the scheme so far, but that probably there are efforts to move with that implementation. And I could see that in the report, the main issue is about also assessing the financials of those
either factories or firms that are retrenching, whether they're retrenching as a result of the recession and so on. But what weighs more to me should be that people as well have been retrenched. You know, because I think government was to try and take care of people who are out of jobs. Whether companies will frustrate you in terms of giving you the money, you know, their financial record to say, yes, we're in distress and so on and so on. To me, it's something as the result is that you have got X number of employees who are now out of their jobs. And I thought there's a particular problem there. Otherwise, we may not spend that money. And whether if companies or the economics begin to say that we are now out of recession, what does that now tell you with the retrenchments that may actually happen beyond that? The second issue is in the document, I think it's just two things that I do not want to go to detail, but I may want to clarify on them. You'll find on page 28 of this one, the National Skills Fund report, it will also under Western Cape, for instance, give you a project sort of that says calling the Cape, and it's about 2.4 million for that. You go to Limpopo, you find disapproved program for about to the tune of 8 million, but it's still reflecting here. I thought if you don't approve, you don't necessarily allocate any funding to it, because then for purposes of accounting and so on, you will have other problems. That is on page 26 and page 28, Limpopo and all that. The other one on the RPL, which is not reflected anywhere on the document. When we took rounds during the oversight, University of Free State claims to be doing some work on RPL. Probably Western Cape, the University of Western Cape as well. But it's like that program is not running anywhere else. FETs have got frustrations, for instance, that they don't have necessarily within their vocational training any programs for that. Now, where are we exactly? Are we able to say this is what we want to see happening by when? Or is something that now we're shying away from because we think we're not able to move and there may be no real budgets for it from our side or from the fund? The last one, I think it's about 5% that is allocated to the DG for discretionary and innovative or innovation projects. I know I'm not questioning whether that's the responsible office to can do that or not, and discretionary is discretionary anyway. But I want to understand how the projects come about. For instance, if others apply and so on, say the 95%, on that 5%, what happens? Does the DG come and contribute some projects amounting to that, or they are somewhat being applied by whoever, and the DG then has the discretion to say, let's pick on these ones because they're strategic or whatever, to say then that should be funded? I just wanted to understand that.
Thank you. Can we get responses, please? I obviously have quite a few issues to probe, but what I'll do is I'll listen to the responses.
Chairperson, the detailed responses will come from Mr. Mashabani in particular and possibly from other members of the delegation. I want to respond to some of the cross-cutting themes. I think the first thing that I want to respond to is the several comments made about the rebranding of what's been happening in the skills terrain. When the President allocated the responsibility for the Skills Development Act to the Department of Higher Education and Training, I believe that that was a very thoughtful response to some of the challenges that have been there historically. It's my view that the disjuncture that was created by having education and training in different departments has in itself contributed to some of the inefficiencies. The frustration that members have mentioned about the lack of funds flowing to universities and universities of technology and FET colleges was unfortunately, I think, a consequence
of the separation as much as both departments are in one government, it does mean that we didn't have the active synergies that we now have. So the request for rebanding, I think that that work is significantly underway. I believe that people who've been familiar with the sector for many years have seen a lot of progress in the last couple of months, both in terms of the functioning of the NSA and the reconceptualization of its role, and some of the changes that will be coming both in the NSF and in the National Skills Development Strategy, which guides the work of the NSF, are going to be groundbreaking. They represent major departures and major new ways of doing things. The second thing that I thought might be useful to just deal with at a conceptual level is the notion of the architecture of the system and how these things fit together. And I'm going to take 2 minutes, if you'll allow, to just look at the macro architecture in a way. It's fundamentally what we have is a Human Resource Development Council chaired by the Deputy President that looks at the 20-30 year perspective in terms of the role of skills development to human resource development, which includes the contribution of basic education, the contribution of labor market policies, and the contribution of science and innovation. The particular contributions that come from what has been created through the National Skills Development Act and the National the Skills Levies Act is that there's an additional contribution to the exchequer, to the fiscus, that comes directly from companies who earn who employ a certain number of employees. So we get the levy, and the levy is guided by the National Skills Development Strategy. And the National Skills Development Strategy gives the resources that go into CETAs and the resources that go into the NSF must be led by the National Skills Development Strategy, which is linked to the HRD. Now, I have explained that before. But what we need then to understand is that the role of the NSA is a grouping of stakeholders, primarily on a NEDLAC basis, which when it says advising the minister is because the department has executive responsibilities. And the groupings of stakeholders, community, labor, business, and other government departments, look at what's happening in terms of what the department is doing through its responsibilities in the NSF, through its engagement and oversight with the CETAs, and through the work that the minister has to take through in terms of his responsibility to gazette the NSDS and the CETA reaccreditation. So the NSA is a grouping of stakeholder constituency interests advising the minister in terms of the work that the department does for the minister. I kind of feel a bit frustrated because I don't think I've explained it very well today. But I think that we need to not see the NSA as being the architecture of the Skills Development Act. It's simply a grouping of constituencies sitting outside of the department advising the minister. It's not the whole skills development policy. It's not the whole skills development strategy. It's a grouping of key stakeholders, and we need to strengthen that. And the third thing that I want to just respond to myself before I hand over is the clarity that this committee is going to have to understand as it does its work into the year around the transition in terms of the accounting responsibilities of the two DGs. If you look, Chairperson, at page 3 of the document, the third paragraph under the second paragraph under the introduction, let's be very clear. The minister was appointed in April of last year. I think the department was created in May of 2009. No. Let's all get it very, listen very carefully. Minister was appointed in April. Department was created in May. Legislation was assigned to the minister from November. He could take no legal act in terms of the Skills Development Act prior to November. Budget was created was tabled in Parliament, and the budget remained with the Department of Labor until the end of March. And the accounting officer until the end of March is a DG of Labor. That must be understood. When the annual reports are submitted, you will be interrogating the DG of Labor. All financial decisions are taken by the DG of Labor until the end of March.
been very well researched. It's gone through presidency. It's gone through the state law advisors, and that is the position. So there cannot be any financial decision taken by the DG of Higher Education and Training except from the 1st of April. Mr. Patel may want to add to it because he's been a great assistance to me in managing that. So all decisions up until the 31st of May are the decisions of the accounting authority. We, 31st of March, yeah, thank you. So I think that that's the first thing that's very important. The next thing that I want to deal with, which is a cross-cutting, is the legislative cleanup that needs to happen. We've got, and it's there in the strategic plan, a range of legislation that's been assigned to it. All of it needs to be cleaned up. That process is underway because it's no longer compatible with itself. It refers to different ministers, etc., as well as the green paper process that is also referred to in the strategic plan. And the last thing before I hand over to Mr. Mashabani is that one of the things that must frustrate the committee is that you do get different information at different times because information is continually changing. Every day the information changes. So we can either give annual reports or 6 monthly reports, but a question that you ask today is going to be different to the question you asked last week because money is moving all of the time. So I think that if it's easier for the committee, let's agree on a quarterly figures, and then we'll always give quarterly figures because we present quarterly reports and we're happy to present them to you. Some, I'm not saying that that covers all the names. In fact, sometimes be errors, and we're happy to accept those when they exist. But it may be better, and I would propose that we just give you quarterly figures every quarter and refer back rather than up-to-date figures.
I'm going to allow Member Kubai, because I think it is her that's so misunderstanding there in terms of how figures change, DG. So I think you have to clarify this point.
Okay. I am going to disagree with the DG in the response that she's given me. That's maybe I was hoping that Mr. Mashabani would understand what I'm talking about because I raised this issue even last week. The issue is that you get a document today, and I'm trying to get my secretary to bring me the other document, DG, so that you can see what I'm talking about. Is that on last week, Tuesday, we were sitting with the NSF in TZN. We got information on Thursday or Wednesday. We said with NSF in Pretoria. On the same matters, I raised the issues, and we got a different briefing, different document, and I raised it to see, can't we try? Even on that, I specifically then just went to the view of us giving more detailed report in terms of the monies, the figures. In spending of provinces. That's where we have now the strategic projects in terms of the documents that we have today. And I'm saying the figures are different from the three documents.
Now I want to give over. I think the strategic thrust has been dealt with. Can we hear then from the person in charge of NSF?
Thank you, Chair. I think the DG has dealt with some of the overall issues, but perhaps the other general comment one might want to make is the following. If you take the notion that the NSF provides the facility, makes the funding available at any moment. The funding is available. And then an issue arises around under expenditure, especially in your provincial level. It does become difficult to blame the NSF for the under expenditure because, in a sense, there is not much you could do as a fund to go in a provincial government and I don't know what you do to rough up people to check up spending or whatever. I think treasury faces the same problem. Funds are made available. At the end of the financial year, they are all over.
the funds that are taken back. So we're facing the same situation. There is nothing in the NSF that says we have never made funding available to any province. In fact, as I indicated, 886 million was committed in December, approved, said here's a facility of 99 million, you have 3 years to spend it. Mpumalanga took 18 months, not to move a cent, 18 months that money sat inside their bank account. There were all sorts of political bickering, departments wanting to take the money apart and allocate it. But those are not issues that you could step inside and say, Mr. Premier, I demand that this money be spent. There's not much you can do. You can only appeal to your colleague. We treat them with respect. They are colleagues in government. We can't dictate to them. So that's the general point that one has to make around this. And these things, I'm afraid, committee members will continue. We'll make funds available. There is no guarantee that provinces will spend them. Again, we'll try and make sure that perhaps our exposure in terms of how much money we have spread out at least creates a level of decent spending that the committee can appreciate. In other words, if, for example, you have committed only a billion, sometimes you're guaranteed 25%, which is 250 million. At least if you have committed 3 billion in projects, you might end up with a billion spent that year. There is a problem with capacity to spend, whether it's a province, whether it's a municipality, and there are all sorts of issues. These are not issues that the NSF, a small fund like us, can address. I'm sure Treasury faces the same problem with just how our own systems are able to spend funding. The same problem I can tell Madam about the students. It's not that the NSF doesn't provide funding to NSF. We gave them 51 million last year. The report, when conciliation was done, only 37 million was spent. I mean, 37 for the whole financial year. But that whole funding was transferred in one bulk. So the problem is not necessarily with the NSF. The funds were there. I don't know. Again, NASFAS also has a problem with universities themselves. The allocation system is a bit difficult. Sometimes funds are returned to NASFAS and they end up with the NSF and all of that. So those are just general things just to mention around this whole question of under expenditure. It's an issue that we believe we can be assisted to resolve, but we need to just mention it doesn't lie at the NSF only. Perhaps to some more specific and general issues, the training layoff, if I may start at the end. In terms of those who are retrained, we have received reports, I'm sure some of you are aware of them, that the Department of Labor has just launched another scheme. 5 billion worth of funding has been allocated for the 10-11 financial year to assist up to 700,000 people who have been retrenched or dismissed during that period of the economic crisis. So in terms of just your concern around those people, I'm sure that facility will be available to assist all of those who fell through the cracks before the training layoff scheme could take off effectively in terms of preventing those job losses in the first place. So there is another plan that the department, the training layoff scheme would continue. They are finding ways of making sure that it works a bit more effectively. The Department of Economic Development, I think the DDG there has been charged with the responsibility to make sure that it, for the 10-11 financial year, at least 50,000 workers are reached through that scheme and will be working closely with them. Regarding the report in the provinces, I must just indicate that the given the time that we had been asked to compile this thing, a lot of things could have slipped up in the information that we provide. I mean, I'm sure when you read somewhere where it says disapproved project, it's part of what is in the reporting structure of the province. We would like to keep some of those so that we are able to balance the figures, so that we arrive at the 99 million, because if we had taken out that figure, the figure will drop and show that the province has less money than that. So it's more a balancing thing. It's not actually to say that we are reflecting things that are. This is not an audited report, committee members. It's an information sharing report. I think it may be fair to say that we're still going to produce an audit of the financial of the NSF in terms of what has been spent and all of that. The other issues that I may like to just highlight is that in the issues around the strategic plan of the NSF about the objectives, Honourable Member Mushwana, the objectives are not in any particular order of importance. Objective 3 is as important as Objective 1, so it doesn't matter how the order works. We have to achieve all of them. At the end of the year, we would allocate resources and account for all the objectives. But also that in terms of the rollover, I understand the legislation says we can roll over funds, but the committee clearly against high levels of under expenditure, it looks criminal to just be interested in rolling over funds. But I'm sure I've already highlighted some of the problems around the under expenditure that we have partners who are supposed to assist us. You could take a careless view and take this money, all of it, and give it to NASFAS. Go and sit and say, I have spent the money. The report will come at the end of the financial year that shows NASFAS has another $2 billion of your funding still in the account. It is still our funding, whether it sits in a provincial account or not. From where we stand, simply disbursing money is not expenditure until that money has moved and benefited a person. So it doesn't solve much, I mean, for us to go on a reckless kind of spree and just dump monies everywhere and come to you and say we have dispersed. We do want to take that responsibility to make sure that it is spent for the things and that it also moves from those third-party accounts and that.
What exactly is the figure, the rollover figure?
The preliminary figures, if I may just quickly find the...
Chairperson, just while you would get the figures, there's an annual figure and there's a cumulative figure because it's a cumulative over years. So as part of the new work that this department has to do, we have to reduce an accumulative balance that's several years in the making. So Mr. Masabani is looking for the figures, but we can give you the figure for the 2019 financial year, and then we can give you figures for the accumulation of the years before that. Okay. So there was a parliamentary question, and in the parliamentary question we gave the answer in terms of last year's financial year, but there's accumulated. The other thing while Mr. Masabani gets ready is that the figure is always very difficult because there's a question of the money that's received, the money that's committed but not yet allocated, and then the money that's spent. So there's moving targets across all three ranges of those, but Mr. Masabani will clarify.
When we opened the 9-10 financial year, that is in April of 2009, we had a balance of 4.1 billion sitting at our account in the PIC. 4.1 billion. Our preliminary income figures between April and March of this year show that we have received a total of 1.9 billion, combination of interest, fiscal contribution, and the skills levies. And that takes our total funding, if you like, to 6.1 billion. If you just take this, we just funds that we had. Against that, we have recorded preliminary expenditure. This is unaudited of 844 million, according to our own reports that we generate on a monthly basis. That should then bring a surplus of 5.2 billion if you just take off that 844 from the 6.8 billion. And against that, we are carrying over projects across all the funding windows. And in terms of the preliminary figures, again, this is also gets audited, but 887 sit in active contracts that we still need to roll out, including the provincial projects and that kind of thing. And then there are other pipeline projects that are sitting, waiting for decision. There's about $1 billion that we want to commit in projects that whose application process started last year, etc. And then there are other smaller projects that have been, so it brings about a pipeline of about $2.5 billion in projects. And that then leaves us with, again, this is not an audited figure, uncommitted funds of roughly around $2.7 billion. So that's how, that's where we are at this point. And hence, when you read our financials there and our expenditure estimates, we're trying to move the spending levels up beyond what we potentially receive on an annual basis, kind of jack up spending above your income that you are potentially budgeting for a deficit to try and work out all these surpluses, and goes that also get us into a bit of trouble. Thank you.
Is there anything on the NSA, Chairperson?
Some comments have been made. I mean, my colleagues responded to those questions and comments. But from where I'm sitting, Chairperson, in terms of the functions of the NSA itself, I think Mary clarified that in the November strategic planning workshop, that issue was clarified in terms of the role that it should play. I think what is remaining of the NSA is to critically unpack that act. I mean, Kiro spoke about the NSA doing everything in its power to meet the objective of the act. I mean, we need to unpack that so that our advice to the minister is relevant to what the act expects of us. I mean, the capacity of the NSA, unfortunately, when you take you are borrowed a car or you get into a car that is not originally yours and you can't into any and you're caught by the traffic cops and the lights are not working, you take responsibility. You can't say it's not my car, somebody, you take responsibility and you take the blame. And we really take those comments very positive. I mean, I was in the budget speech by the minister recently, and I listened to all those comments from the opposition party and everybody, and I asked the secretary to please get those comments because they are important for us. We are sure that when people raise these comments from here, I mean, in this house here, and even in the budget, during the budget speech, it was not about self-interest or political scoring. Our view as an NSA is what is that we can use from those comments and use them for the betterment of the nation, you know. And that's, and even today, those comments, we're taking them positively. I don't think there's a war. I think there's more critical questions that we need to look at. The capacity of the NSA to advise the minister is very critical. We have to have a very effective NSA. The authority must be knowing what it's doing. It must know. You see, my philosophy is that you need to understand all the basics and complex issues. At the strategic level, you don't only have to understand the complex issues or strategic issues, but also the basics, because it is the basics that contributes to achievement of strategic issues. So I think those are the things that we are discussing and going to continue to discuss to have more effective NSA. I mean, the issue of branding, she responded to that, but I can tell you, I have asked the secretariat, is there any information that you had in the past which discusses the marketing of the NSA to make sure that the people know what the NSA is doing and should be knowing, and they, you know, what critical role they should be playing. So I think there are those
clarity of roles between the department and the NSA. However, if, I mean, the department will have to do much more from the advices of the NSA. For example, the NSA can go to the department and say, we need some kind of work on this particular area. The department must do it and come and present to the NSA. The NSA must say no or yes and critique whatever is brought to us. So I think with the capacity of the NSA, really, we will be able to advise the minister so that the nation can see we're moving forward. And I took comments from the Honorable sitting there about the scarcity of skills in your provinces, in your municipalities, and so forth. These are critical issues that we have to, I mean, there are many things that we can talk about, Chair, many things that we can talk about. The NSA really have to come, you know, very out clearly about how do we respond. Of course, the department has to work on that, you know, in the details, but the NSA strategically has to really lead in terms of other issues that we, yeah. So generally, Chair, I think we later need to discuss, you know, further that communication strategy as well as marketing strategy of the NSA and see how we go out, you know, because there are many things that we have to unpack as an NSA. For example, how do we support all those five priority areas of the government? How do we support those issues in terms of the skills development and so on? Thank you.
Thank you.
Two questions that were not responded to. The discretionary by the DG and the RPL.
RPL and discretionary.
Chairperson, the discretionary is not a blank check. There's no doubt about that. We are governed in terms of the Skills Development Act, and the Skills Development Act says that the DG may use funds for any purpose as defined by the Skills Development Act. So it has to be consistent with the purposes of the Act. And secondly, the DG is accountable not only to Parliament, but it also takes all of those decisions through the National Skills Authority. Now, I did mention earlier that the National Skills Authority is an unusual structure in that it's constituency-based. It's not necessarily an advisory council in an expert fashion, so, for example, a council for higher education. And the reason that it's constituency-based is it's that the very constituencies that are represented in the NSA that have fought so hard for this money to be available for the purposes of skills development. So when the DG, on the advice of officials and advice of the NSA, would choose to use that provision and to use that window, it would be subject to the scrutiny of the NSA and the constituencies themselves. So it's not going to become a slush fund.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps just to also add, in terms of just the discretionary, that how it has happened, I'm sure there's a few projects that you see that fall under discretionary. Some of those projects are those projects that have been identified through some of the visits that, for example, portfolio committee members make, or your minister may walk into a community in a function and he gets an appeal for assistance in skills. So we sometimes find ourselves, although we fund at the national level, responding to a small community project, assisting, say, traditional leaders or assisting develop a group of women on certain skills. So it's an ad hoc type of thing, but as the DG says, it's not a blank check. The project still goes through a project evaluation committee that looks at the merits of each of those little projects and say, this is something we can commit money to. It's related to the purposes of the Act and all of that. Again, in terms of just the governance structure, there is nowhere in our systems where the DG is given a blank check to just decide. Most of the issues are generated using procedures of the NSF, which are audited on an annual basis by the AG and all of that. The RPL issue, we must say that it has not been one of the issues that has been reflected heavily in the skills development strategy, which is the driving document that directs how we spend our funding, both us and the CITES. However, some bit of RPL happens in the context of any day-to-day design of a project. For example, in Abbott, before you place any learner, whether it's in Abbott level 1 or 2, you normally do some kind of a pre-assessment to find out what level of knowledge and skill that person has. Unfortunately,
I think you've answered the question. I think it's implicitly possible in some projects, but
yes.
It is not explicit.
It was explicit.
It's fine. Thank you.
Yeah.
thank you. The Member Magaze.
Thanks, Chair. But Chair, I am tempted to apologize. There was I think the other members, they know the village that we are staying in. There was a crisis. So.
It's always a good temptation to apologize.
Chair, I just want to ask, Chair, it's a general question. Because I'm listening to the latter speaker, and the speaker when I was coming in, and also the problems that leads to the provinces not spending their money, and also the NSF. They would want, you know, provinces to spend this money, but due to the limitations that the legislation it has, you know, to them. But my question is that, Chair, is it possible for the leadership of the agency to exactly spell out or point out which clauses in that legislation that limits the performance of provinces not spending, so that as a committee we are able in our deliberations to look at which areas that needs amendments, repeal, or we need to insert some new, you know, new clause for the functioning. But at the very same time, Chairperson, I'm also I also want to say sometimes experience taught us, you learn, you know, from other experiences. Sometimes we would say it's a legislation that really blocks us not to do what we're supposed to do. But you will find that the legislation, it just gives guidance. The onus is on a person who has been given that responsibility. How do you translate, whether it's a policy or the legislation, into a program? And that translation, will it be a visible one, or the implementable translation into a program? Because what I've observed, Chair, even with other agencies, you'll find the legislation is clear, but I think the problem or the issue, it's not a problem, let me say, use the word issue. We have issues, and issues that we have, it's a leadership issue, management issue, financial management issue. I don't know whether it's because of the transformation or it's what. But I would really request that let's get to those areas being spelled out to us so that we can sit down and deliver it. Thank you.
I really don't want to continue. Safe to say the last person that I'm going to allow. And then you, but if you can then just respond directly. Mishwana?
Thank you, Chairperson. I seek to understand the companies, because I see somewhere there are zero companies. I'm not sure whether I'm on page 17 to make sense of what I want to ask of the National Steel Fund report. I see that actually there is one province which is consistent of not having any company, and that is Limpopo. I don't see any company, therefore no expenditure. Of course, no learners will come out of this. But what informs this? Must the provinces spell out that they have companies, or you pick out certain companies from provinces? And because I see the zeros, and I'm concerned about that. And sometimes, like in Mpumalanga, on this very same page, there is only one company which got that amount there, but produced one learner. That amount to produce one learner, I'm checking, because the one northwest below it has one company, and it was given a less amount, but it produced 17 learners. So I need to understand those. Thanks.
Just very quickly, in terms of the provinces, I do believe we've got a long way to go. One of the things that we haven't reported on yet, although it's covered a little bit in the text, is the fact that the National Skills Development Act does require that we establish provincial skills development fora. I think these have been unevenly implemented in the past, and I will be quite frank that we haven't yet given attention, I haven't yet, the department in terms of myself working with skills branch. But this is very much on the radar screen, and I think that there's two ways forward. Number one, to get vibrant provincial structures which bring together the providers, bring together the CETAs, bring together the provinces, and I think we're looking forward to doing that. The second thing is that I think that members are correct that we need to use the National Council of Provinces as a very important way of ensuring that we get another avenue of communication between the people of provinces, the governments that represent them, and their representatives in the National Council of Provinces. So I look forward to more discussion about that in the future.
But perhaps to also add that currently the legislation, Honourable Member, is that it doesn't necessarily limit expenditure. I think all expenditure in government terms is governed by the PFMA, and you can ask any DG, CFO in departments, they would always have something to say about how it restricts your movement in terms of, you know, how fast you can roll out projects that require, that would ultimately lead to expenditure. But I'm sure we would not be advocating that the PFMA be amended in order to speed up expenditure. There are areas where people have achieved expenditure using the same piece of legislation. I'm sure it's around the coordination and how things flow within a structure that tends to affect the expenditure rather than the legislation itself. But I think in terms of the legislation, in our view, we need to, because we have brought in all these institutions that were previously separated, the colleges, the skills, the CETAs, you do need to bring some harmony into them in terms of how they would work together. For example, there's nothing that says we would fund skills through colleges. Maybe that's the next level that we need to take our expenditure, our legislation. The question, Honorable Member Mshwana, around companies, this scheme, if one were to just indicate, the NSF is merely a partner on the skills development side of the things. The projects originate from the DTI as part of the incentive scheme. A company from China says, I want to set up a plant in KZN to manufacture bolts or whatever. The DTI provides an incentive to that company in terms of an infrastructure grant and that. And then they approach the NSF for a training grant once they have got that grant, once it has been approved by the TTI. So we do not make the choices which company come. And that training grant also says, we say that they should take in new workers. So what you're seeing, they are not necessarily learners, are new workers who have been employed as a result of that incentive scheme, and we provide a training facility. Let me leave it.
Can I indicate then that what we've received, members, was both those presentations, and I think we've interrogated. I think if the department and the NSA, and then under the department also the NSF, I think what we are saying is that as a committee, we believe that we would want to set the benchmark so that when in 6 months' time from now you have to report, we can say these are the great things that we've... So whatever you are putting forward, this is going to be the Bible. That's why I said in the beginning, we can't, in a sense, judge a new portfolio on the back of just a year, though there's old in the new. And I'm looking at the old in the new. the acting chief director. So I'm saying that it's not as if there is a complete new structure. The point is there's a transfer of officials, of the information, etc., etc. And therefore, it's how we then are able to understand that new space and then reposition ourselves in that. But if we are coming back in 3 months' time from now, etc., on evaluation, then clearly we... If you say this is the rollout for this financial year, then clearly that is going to be the assessment and the interrogation and so on. Let me also say to the chairperson, Mr. Maja Dibudi, that Purdue, that I think you've appreciated. Now, we've gone a bit deeper, and members delved deeper into things last week than they've done it now, that and if we start to get into the notion about is it compliance or is it performance, one of the, I mean, like at some stage the education department came here to us, I'm saying in the old, end of last year, when we were dealing with the annual reports, they said to us that they've done well because they've performed. There was no, I think, they had a clean audit for 7 to 8 to 9 years. And my view is that the clean audit, therefore, does not mean solid performance. Because anyone that understands financial management and understands the PFMA at its lowest ebb is if you just comply with figures, then you will get a clean audit. Am I right, CFO? Yes, yes. Because we are not, I'm not speaking about when there's corruption or so, etc. I'm not speaking about that issue. I'm speaking about if everyone just do its very basic things right in terms of compliance and movement of figures, etc., then you are complying. But that doesn't mean the impact in education has been felt in our society. In fact, it's a contradiction in terms, because the society has told us that we are not giving quality education. Every political party made that assessment. DVSA made that assessment. Our communities made that assessment. Now, if we do that, so this committee doesn't want to hear at times just that compliance issues, and therefore I've heard a little bit despondency in that beginning, and I understand why, because every time that we will engage and will interrogate, it will look as if there's a standoff, and we want to be on the same team in a sense. We don't want to have a standoff. It is not parliament vis-a-vis a department, etc. However, we therefore would want to, in a sense, in playing on the same page, it therefore means our bona fide needs to be from both sides, except that we want to change this issue for the better. Now I'm going to give a few examples. If one just unpack, now we've sent out a questionnaire, and we're going to bring the department and every seater, but if we actually unpack the various performance issues relating to some of these seater information and et cetera, much to be desired. But if I want to do an impact assessment of if you actually look at that 21 billion, or just take this figure that was spent over the last couple of years in NSF, who's actually the beneficiaries at the various levels in all of this? What happens to the beneficiaries? What we've picked up as a structure, and we're going to be very strong, and how do we put in place empowerment impact assessment models in this women in development, women in training, youth in training, youth in development, not only to be a beneficiary of a certificate, but who's doing this training? What is the mindset of the trainees? What is the mindset of those that are actually giving the training? The other day, TJ, my wife, was going for some strategic session at a workshop, and she SMS me and asked me, should she actually tell the people what's the surname? She normally doesn't do that. And I said, yes. She says, no, she's not going to do that. And she was sitting and listening, and the type of stuff that came from a funded structure of government, an entity of government, meaning a CETA giving money or an NSF, it was one of those national skills kind of engagements, giving money to a provider, going and engaging strategically. But it's the worst of worst stuff that was said about the minister in terms of the individual and the policy perspective, as well as, for example, about the department and where this government and society is going. Now, what is this? We are then, so there's a training institution, training society and being paid to do the training. It wasn't a training on a certificate or so, it was a strategic workshop, etc. But that's a very real example. Training people, and what are they actually telling the people as they're training? Are they building patriotic citizens in that process? Or are they building a citizen that says, you know, this government is just messing up. This society is just messing up. Now, I'm putting that there because we're going to, and I'm raising it specifically to the chairperson of this structure, because it's something that we feel very passionate about. If we go today in our communities of all the people that benefited, how do they contribute into our society? In a positive way, in a negative way? How much are they doing? So it's patriotism, it's ethos of that training providers. In fact, our judgment currently is that the majority of your best-performing, so-called best-performing training providers, in fact, the new venture creation project, DG, in this country, the service provider in the NVC does not need to bring empowerment impact, doesn't need to bring equity, because he or that group will get all the work in this country. But it is an exclusively 100% plus white group. Now, what are we doing? So we're not comfortable with how, for example, people that are actually supposed to fly the flag in the implementation, not the departmental official or the secretary to a body, but those in the field, how do they behave? I think a point also around unemployment. We we've talked about this, and it's something that we specifically want to take up with yourself. Now, let me come to the provinces. What we did not hear is what is the that those plans were conceptualized 3 years plus ago. Am I right? Right, 2005. Yeah, but there's an envelope, there's a period. Am I right?
Isn't they have to be tied to the NSDS. So the NSDS operates for 5 years.
No. I'm speaking about the provincial government funding. That envelope where 50% is spent, it seems to me, and 50% is not spent. Now, those plans came into being 3 years ago. How much of those plans per province is actually still real? Was at that point of time, just because there was an envelope of a 95 or 98 million rand to be invested into a province, how much, in fact, was just a submission because somebody just felt it was necessary? All good grounds, but not necessary anymore, part of the real agenda, and therefore 50% is not able to be spent. Now, you've given them an extension until the end of May or June. June 2011 on that specific grant. The other day, I specifically was called to the Premier of the Northern Cape, and I raised this in that last meeting. They are asking us to try and bring the CETAs and the NSF, and I said, but just look at your existing envelope in the NSF, and the Premier wanted to know, what is this? What are we talking about? How much is this? And it's not their fault. Remember, it is a new government. Some of the old has gone, and we are now sitting with... So there must be a refresher process. I think what I want to advise as a committee on that refresher process is we need to be able to convene with the NCOP, including with the legislature, respective individuals, where there's under expenditure that's concerning. So what we will take from here is, one, the question of, is there a legislative process required as raised by Member Kubai? And this is not the general legislative process, specifically related to some of the NSF processing. The second thing would be the analysis per province and the committee to apply its mind of how we'll assist the NSF. We possibly have a ability to pull in one day together everyone that takes decisions at a provincial level and in the NCOP and say, let's now discuss the Eastern Cape. If there is 70% under expenditure on money in the provincial account that actually gets interest as we are speaking, what is the cleanup of that? And how do we, in a sense, make sure? If the NSFAS is sitting next door and NSF is sitting at the other side, but you're raising the points about NSF, it's either you're going to have to meet them or we're going to have to convene that type of discussion. Which we'll be able to do because we've raised this concern about scarce skills and under expenditure that side. And then I think the massive public participatory process. I was in Southern Cape yesterday, so it was a blessing in disguise when I got that SMS member Kubai about the sittings until 7 o'clock last night, and. They are saying access to information. The Southern Cape, we had all municipalities, including the district municipality, access to information. So public participation. And then I think the RPL, it's an issue that is of concern to the committee. We are feeling, DG, that it's not, it has lost, not over the last 2 months or 3 months, etc., but over a while, it has lost, in a sense, people mentioned it as a finder. And that's why I didn't want you to give detail because you then would have had to explain that there is this project possibly, but it's not a strategy that's rolled out. It's not only, primarily not even NSF. We've seen it at universities, and we've seen it, for example, at the CETAs. We don't see the explicit process. In fact, when we've met SACWA end of October, beginning November, we've raised this issue, and they also admitted that there is a serious lack of coherence when it comes to RPL. And that is something that we feel must be picked up in a very real way. So what we will do as the committee, we will then put up an action process out of this. understanding that there's some things that will that you need to continue what you need to, but most probably there is strategic interventions, A, where we can help, but also where we want to drill down much more. In this document, it seems that we need to get into the details of this document, not necessarily with everyone, but at least as a committee at some stage, going page by page, because it's very substantial information. Some of the members alluded to that. I've kind of got quite a lot of, but I'm not going to get into the details. Because then, if one works through this document, we'll actually see where the real problems are. And then the question is, how are we able to intervene in that space in a corrective process and not necessarily in a negative way? So with that, members, I think we will conclude this part. Let me just hear from the Director General. This week is also a great week for South Africa when it comes to this landscape. And if you are able just to mention the tomorrow and Friday.
Tomorrow and Friday and Sunday and Monday. Chairperson, on Thursday and Friday we have the Higher Education Summit. It's a very important summit because it brings together the various constituencies who comprise the higher education sector, the university management leadership, student organizations, worker organizations, to contemplate the extent to which the sector is sufficiently engaged with the social and economic purposes that education must serve, and of course the educational and research purposes, and are sufficiently of one mind in order to address those challenges. The summit's going to be opened by the Deputy President. It was to be opened by the President, but he has had to go to Namibia, so the Deputy President is going to open it. And we have international guests. Tonight we have a very important public event with the Mail and Guardian to start some of the debates. And the outcome of the conference is intended to be a declaration which just clarifies the need for these different constituencies to be able to work in some tension, but around a common goal of the role of universities in the development of our country. So that's Thursday and Friday. The host institution is on Central, CPUT, Cape Peninsula University of Technology. The chairperson, on Sunday, we also are, as the country, hosting the Association of Commonwealth Universities Conference. And that's also going to be opened by the Deputy President on Sunday morning at the University of Cape Town. So it's going to be a very busy time for academics and a time for, I think, some serious reflection and new commitments. Thank you.
Can we then get into our agenda? We would be able to excuse the department and everything of the best for the next 2 days. We have a 3 minute break and then just reconvene.
Are you chasing us out?
Are you chasing us?
I'm going to use the tonight.
I don't know what to do with my legs.
Oh, okay.
I hope you have lost some weight in between. It does cause
strength.
Oh, it does cause one. Oh, look. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Unfortunately, I won't be back. And can you take my apology for Saturday for the mission plane? Please, I won't be. I have to go home for something.
Yeah. Me too. But I've got an issue to raise about that.
Members, can we get back into it?
Oh, this is very strange.
Look, I think what we have to do is possibly you must mandate me, and it's probably the work just to look at. We just now need the workshop. Remember we talked about a workshop going through every theta discussion by a day out, a day and a half, go through every, the 23, and including obviously the kind of NSF, but not necessarily for people just to come and make presentations. I think more is, the question is, what do we now put forward? And that's where obviously the capacity is going to be required, because I've noted, we know what happened last week, and we know some of the, if we were supposed to deal with the real issues and interrogate it, it would have just again been a little bit of a not so nice situation. So also you would pick up that Parliament's role is not necessary, I'm saying just generally now, in terms of the, if the NSF has been formed or the CITES has been formed, it's really just linked to the department, and Parliament is not really, if you look at other committees, some committees have a much more direct relation with those agencies. So we'll do that evaluation, and then we need to come up, I think, with a action sheet that we can direct rather, because we've now got all the briefings that we require, and if members are still feeling that that's not where what really it's supposed to be, even if we bring people for another 10 briefings, it's not as if we're going to get those things easily. So we're going to have to start saying, this is there for the framework. This is what we practically are going to put in place in order to measure and to assess yourself. The department and those various institutions. But let's get back to the agenda. I think we've got, remember, Macabella?
Although I missed some initial comments you were making, but just the other issue which we did not ask in NSF, is there participation in the rural development, particularly those pilots by the president? And I was engaging them outside, and they have no focus on that. They were hoping that the provincial government, they will have a special relationship with provincial government, and they are not coming on board because apparently that relationship has collapsed. So it may be that ourselves want to try and reposition that and they be able to do investigation as to what skills required and how do they come on board on those things.
Okay. Shall we move? Remember the draft report for the visit to the University of Technology. Member Kuba.
Just one thing on page 4, paragraph 5, where it says the following form part of the discussion. There's a sentence, the paragraph where it starts with, it was a matter for concern that 240 students in FET colleges were promised admission to study engineering at the CPUT. These students were later rejected by the university since they had not taken LEN physics as part of their course. I think there's something wrong with the... So I think we need to fix that part. That's the only part that I've picked up in terms of the report. So that's it, Chair, from my side. That's the only page.
So these students were later rejected since they had not taken... It's wrong there. It's physics. It's part of the course. Take the LEN out.
Chair, I don't want to delay the meeting myself. I have to leave. However, I just thought that the page 4 and 5 is really an artificial differentiation when you say the following forms part of the discussion, then you say responses, and the responses about everybody else. I just think all of that forms part of discussion, in a sense, because,
This is the way we write it, then.
Is it?
No, I'm saying you raised the way we write it.
Yeah, because all of, even the responses were part of
the
day. Yeah. But one thing that was glaringly not captured, which I have on my notes, was the issue. Let me just tell you why that was an issue for them. Because it is a measure, there were institutions that obviously had lower qualified academics than others. So therefore, there is a need to up the stakes in terms of academic development. So sharply they were saying, because we asked for them to demand, but they were saying that they need funding for self-development at all levels. It is important to the situation.
Yeah. Can we live with that? Including, can we, just then, if we adopted, can we ask also that we, there were certain actions out of that, one of that, the department was supposed to act on that 250 or so students. And when I spoke to the acting deputy director general afterwards, 2-3 weeks after that, it became clear it's a national problem. So I think we should just get feedback from the department of what is the situation currently and what is being done with those. You see, the problem literally was that these students have gone through what they were supposed to do. They've been told they will get access if they go into these courses at FET. They became the bright, brilliant students to go to a university, and suddenly then they've been told they can't. So in a sense, people that were not going into for engineering, that did say hospitality, they are going and continuing, but years now engineering students that finish college that must go into entry level 1 at university first year, and they can't go because they didn't have physics. So it is for me a bit of a problem. So we should just ask the department progress report on that particular issue. Can we then accept this minute as suggested changes happen?
Sorry, Chairperson. I've never been to any university where there were 2 student representative councils. But I don't know if this is well written to say that the university has a single SRC that represents all students. Am I clear? I'm saying it sounds as if at other universities there are more than 1 SRC, because it says here the university has a single SRC which represents all students. Normally there's 1 SRC.
It's the various campus.
You can have
it's not the same. It's correct the way it has been captured. For example, when you go to other institutions, you have decentralized SRC. So they vary from one institution to the other. So I think that the sentiment is to say there is a central SRC. That's where we engaged.
Mm.
Okay.
Many campuses.
Yeah. Just another one at 6. It's really not capping of students. It's capping of enrollment.
Sounds like
being... Serious implications when you say the students are being capped.
What capped means graduation, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Is that
well
it?
There.
I think we also would want to suggest, just as, because we've gone on our oversight visit, there was some concerns by members, I think when I joined them. So we're also going to ask the, at some stage, we might just speak to the administration, just in terms of logistics and all of those things, and just the way we prepare, but more importantly, when we are there, what the support staff is supposed to do and what members are supposed to do. I think it's just that, those issues. So we're just going to have to, but I will have that discussion. Remember, we weren't around last week, I think yesterday I wasn't here. So it's just those things. We might just tighten up, and especially for the next visit. Now, speaking about the next visit, the study tour, excuse me? No, we've done that. Okay.
Can I just raise something on that one, on the higher education?
Mm-hmm.
I think members have been asked, I don't know if there's any logistic arrangement, there's nothing that has been communicated to members. So we've got to be clear what is the way that we are working, because it's off-site tomorrow. So not all of us are able to drive there. So
no, if all of, and we don't all come from.
So we, but we are all
and
going.
And we think that was a bunch of stuff.
So we are all, we are all going. Can we? But it starts at 9, isn't it?
Yes, sorry, Chair. We'll arrange a shuttle that will pick up members in Sound of Portes at 8:30 because it starts at 9. So
8:30 is not good. The bell.
We're leaving. We're moving. We're at least not in the train.
We don't know that. We need to know that.
The bottom line, if you're in Acacia Park, it's actually better to move from there straight to the venue. That's the hard reality.
Yeah.
Even
how
if you're in Laboria, it's even better.
How do you get there? Though? We don't have cars, don't know.
Ish.
I do, but how do you get from
Acacia to Belleville?
Can we send you some delegates?
Can we then ask? Look, members, do you want the committee secretary to organize transport from here? Yes or no?
It's just that it was going to be easy because I thought by this time Anelo would have checked with members who's going to use transport. For example, I would drive myself from Laboria Park directly to Belleville, it's closer. But if so that you understand how many people, and then the logistics are driven from that point, because it's in the morning, people are going to be stuck in traffic from their parks coming to Parliament. Then again, from Parliament back to, because the parks are closer to where we are going anyway.
You come from Belhar to Cape Town
to
go back
to
Belhar.
That's
basically
what is being said. It does not make logistical sense.
No.
I'm saying at least we should have a sense of who's going with the transport arranged by committee from where, and make possible logistical arrangement that makes sense, that is easy. So at least say within the next, by 3 hours time, Anneli should know, or by the time when we go out of here, members should indicate if they're going to use transport, and therefore he makes those arrangements, if it's possible, checking those logistics, and then get back to members in terms of where they would be picked up.
Agreed.
I think let's work it that way.
Okay, so if you've got a problem, please come and speak to Anneli. But if you can organize on your own as we are sitting here, please organize.
But, Jefferson, I need to say something. Isn't it? Unless it is taken for granted that we have all transferred our cars from wherever we sit, we need to be told that there is transport instead of coming individually.
No. We are saying that normally there would be transport organized.
Okay.
The venue, however, is in Belleville.
the suggestion is that whether it's a Kaiser Park or a Borea Park, that it would be closer that way. Now, if there's anyone else, and so if Member Kubai said that she is going from in the morning from there, if informally, if there's anyone, for example, that feels that they most probably can make an arrangement, I don't want us to make the arrangement and saying that I'm not, we do it just quickly afterwards. However, if you really have a problem and you can't make an arrangement, we will sort through the secretary it out, but let's then just do it, just register the problem just afterwards. So I'm trying to caution that we don't make of something that actually is just very basic, a big issue for now.
Mm.
Is that fine?
Yeah.
Okay. But then there's members that not here, so we can just ask Anneli then just to assess them as well. Meaning if there's really going to be a problem, then some of us will, if he says, we'll most probably say, now let's just get a car, hire a cab from that place, and then just, so that's what we are suggesting is going to be done. Okay. The study tour to the Netherlands and UK, secretary.
Thank you, Chair. I've received the application from the house chairperson, and it actually came back and actually. The house chairperson said that he needs to meet with the programming whip as well as you, the chairperson of the committee, to look for another date for the study tour. That was the response from the house chairperson.
So they are asking us to reconsider the date. I didn't meet anyone yet because we were not around. So I will set up that meeting today. And yeah, if members can recall, it is the end of May, isn't it? So we discussed it between myself and the WIP. We believe that we should try and stick to that. Otherwise, it's going to be extremely difficult. So let's assess and hear what is the rationale.
Please move the date.
Excuse me?
Please move the date. The chairperson is asking. The chairperson of the committee of the house is asking.
Because you've got a subjectivity.
Yeah.
We will try and let's get clarity. Let's get clarity from there. That's why we wanted to go with, because we wanted to go with, man.
Oh, okay.
Leave the conference.
Mr. Nasrallah, will you go without me?
I can't do it. I can't go that day.
Okay, but let's hear what is the rationale, and we'll assess. Yeah.
The reality is that if we move the date from May, June is already we are closing. We will not go during the World Cup, and then immediately after that, the program is going to be congested. We are likely to have a lot of three lines from the discussion that we are having in Ukraine. So I don't think we are going to be able to leave after that. So the reality is that we might miss out for this year again. That's the reality. Anel.
It is the last week of May, the 22nd until the
23rd
of May.
Okay. Then just I think the last issue you and Member James were asking, there was a notice that was sent out more as an announcement than anything else, just for members to note on the Education Summit in Mitchell's Plain. It's more announcement, but if you wanted to speak on that.
I just had some questions because it goes under the platform of Parliament, and therefore it involves the Parliamentary Committee, and we were not asked about that.
Mm.
So it's an joint initiative between yourself as PC Chair and the National Planning Minister, Trevor Manuel. And so my concern was whether this was a parliamentary meeting or an ANC meeting.
No, it was.
So I just wanted to ask that one question, and whether, because I haven't seen a program for the day, to see whether it was a non-partisan effort. First and secondly, is a question about who's funding it.
So. No, it's a constituency-based program, and therefore I think, because I insisted that it should actually go just out generally, so whether it is to
just members in a general form, so that people just know, so that we can kind of including that, and it's various stakeholders, so there's going to be career guidance, etc. So it's not a committee function. Mm. So the committee, that's why it was not put on the agenda as a, it was more just so that people know. It's in fact, it's also not the minister in the ministry that's planning it, and it's not the chairperson in his capacity in this committee that's planning it. It is a community initiative between the constituency office and NGOs in the area, so that's what it is.
Yeah. But just to comment on that, but it goes out under the name of Parliament, that was my concern.
No, under the no, it didn't go out in the name of Parliament.
It's on the parliamentary letterhead.
It went out on the parliamentary constituency letterhead. I hope you understand. It didn't go out under the parliamentary, as for example, the committee. It went out as the parliamentary constituency. Then. Okay? But we'll discuss. I mean, like, we'll.
Well,
so it is not a committee issue. That's
no, I understand that, but it's still an issue. Because.
But that's.
Is this the ANC merging into state? That's my issue.
But I don't think that's been in the discussion for this. It is. Yeah. It can be thrown in the media. It can be thrown in Parliament.
Okay.
It can be thrown anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm okay with the date. I'm negotiable.
Thanks. Are you negotiable? Okay. Thank you, members. I think that concludes. Sorry.
There are two things: the invite from Zululand and the invite from Nyasita. That we are invited as committee members. Nyasita is having a conference on the 6th and 7th of May. They've invited us, and I would have thought that it is, we need to get indication if who's covering the expenses. I don't know, you might have to follow with them if they're accommodating us as they're inviting us, or do we need to accommodate ourselves? So normally might say that we need to travel, transport ourselves, and therefore they accommodate, but I think if you can just work on those meetings, please. Secondly, the invite to Zululand, all of us who were there, I think even those who were not there at UNIZULU when we visited, we got invites to Zululand where Minister of Transport, serving Minister of Transport, would be inaugurated as Chancellor, and the Vice Chancellor would be inaugurated. And I've asked Anna to start working on that. The challenges.